we are appreciative this evening of your choice to come and be with us in this study. I indicated this morning that we were going to be talking tonight in regard to the matter of choosing a marriage companion. And I suggested to you that as we studied in regard to this, that it is true that many of us have already made that choice. And yet so often we get an opportunity to try to help others who are going to be making that choice in the future. And there are some things that we need to learn, some things that we need to be reminded of so that we can try to pass that information along to our children or our grandchildren or even to others who simply are looking for information that will help them understand that what they are trying to do is to make a very wise choice in regard to marriage. At the same time, our young people need, from a rather early age, I think, to grow up hearing and learning some of the kinds of principles that God has revealed in the pages of His Word as it pertains to the subject of marriage. And as a result of that, when I look into the faces quite often of our young people and I think about some of the trials and the disappointments that you're going to have to face before your life is over, I want you to know something that my heart feels for you. I guess all of us tonight would be somewhat frightened if we really did know what was in the future for all of us. If you knew what was down the road for you in more than just the few minutes that maybe you can see down the road ahead of you right now, if you could see all the way to the end, it just might be that some of the problems and the trauma that is there would so overwhelm and so discourage you that you would decide that really you're not strong enough to be able to meet what is before us and you might get desperate. Yet sometimes in regard to this, one of the things that may be before us, and I pray most certainly very fervently in regard for all of us that it not be so, but it may be the problem of divorce. It is not a surprising statistic in our society anymore that one out of every two marriages end in divorce. When that happens, let it be understood that there is some kind of disgrace that has been brought onto the family unit by virtue of that. Somebody has not been faithful in regard to the vows that they made before God, and it may be that we have forgotten that when we talk about marriage relationships, that there is more than just a man and a woman that is involved. That there is certainly a man and a woman, but there is also God. And that we must constantly remember that the relationship that we have now established in the home or family is one that has been made before God, and it must meet indeed the principles that He has established in the pages of His Word. Our hope is that some of the things that we can say as we have opportunity to teach, whether it be in our own homes as we talk to our children, as it may be for those of you who are older, who may be talking to your grandchildren, or if you're old enough, maybe even to great-grandchildren along the way, will be to try to give them some of the wise principles of God's will and of His Word that will help them to make wise decisions in this regard. When you think about young people, which inevitably you do when you talk about the idea of marriage selection, be it understood that young people are making a great many important decisions in their life. I would suggest to you that in one way it is a rather sad thing that so many important decisions have to be made at so early in a juncture in the lives of so many of us. It is made at a time when, whether we want to admit it or not, we probably have the least amount of experience and the least amount of knowledge and understanding to be making some of the far-reaching decisions that we are making at such an early stage in the lives that we're living. And sometimes we're just not able to see far enough down the road to see some of the things that others who have been down that road before us have seen or personally have experienced. And what they're trying to do is to warn you at least of the potential possibility of some things that you may face in your lives. I would suggest that when it boils down finally that you and you alone are the one that will make the decision. And if you're very wise, you're going to agonize over those decisions that you make, and there will be more of them than just the marriage matter. For example, you're going to agonize over what career should I choose? Should I choose this career? Am I going to be a success in that? Is it going to be something that I'm going to enjoy? Is it going to be something I'm going to like? Is it going to be something that somewhere or another may draw me away from God? Is it going to be something that is going to produce some kind of tension or strain in the family or the home life? If and when that ever comes into being, maybe because of the nature of the job itself, maybe it's going to take me on the road an awful lot. These are the kinds of things that you agonize over. Or you think about education. You sometimes think, what am I going to do with my life now that I've graduated from high school? Am I going to go to college? Am I going to go to a technical school? Am I going to get some kind of a trade? And if so, then where am I going to go in order to get this kind of information? Am I going to get married? Is certainly one of those decisions that most of us face very early in life. It sometimes backs its way up a little bit, you know, and we start getting worried sometimes rather anxiously over the idea of, am I going to ever find a girlfriend or a boyfriend? And you can back it up far enough now to where you can get it into the area of, am I going to find somebody to go with me or not go with me? And you know, that's for the young kids that go somewhere or talk about going with somebody and they never go anywhere and they never talk on the phone. But nonetheless, they're going with folks and they're breaking up with them and they're doing all the things that the olders are doing. So you can even back it up that far, and all of a sudden our society is putting a certain amount of pressure on our young people in these kinds of a direction. If you do find somebody and all of a sudden you begin to get somewhat emotionally involved, you begin to start worrying about, does this person love me or will they love me like I think I love them? Then you begin to say, well, if I ask this person, would they marry me? And if they say that they would, are they going to stay with me? Are they going to make the kind of commitment that I'm wanting to make? And that is one man and one woman for life. Or is this somebody that I think would leave me? And you know what happens? Inevitably, there's a good deal of worry and there's an awful lot of decisions that have to be made. Before it's over with, many of us worry about worrying about these things. Now, I want you to know something. I've said all of that because I've gone through that. And I am very frank to admit, I'm glad I don't have to go through that again. At least I pray that I don't. Sometimes you do. Sometimes circumstances arise to where a companion dies and somebody decides that they cannot live by themselves or choose not to do that. And all of a sudden they find that these are not subjects that are only for young people. This is not something that only appertains to teenagers. That all of a sudden here they are trying and worrying and making decisions in regard to these same things with the same kind of emotional upheaval that they had when they were 14 or 16 or 18 or 21 years of age, and now maybe they're 50 or 60 doing the same thing. On the other hand, I want you to understand, especially so that young people can see I'm not picking on them, I have some things I want to say along the way to those of us who are mothers and fathers. And what I have to say to us right now pertains to this. We have got to understand that when our young people are going through this period of worry and anxiety and decision making, that it is a crucial time for them. We need to try to be understanding and we need to try to be patient with them. I suggest to you that yelling and nagging really won't do a great deal of work while they're going through this. And what you've got to do is to try to help them recognize that the decisions that they're making are difficult decisions, but at the same time, they are long, far-reaching decisions, and they're ones they're going to have to live with. Our job as parents is to love them, is to try to support them, is to try to help them through this very crucial period in their lives. Let me remind you along that line that whatever it is that is so crucial to them is just as important and just as major, looms just as large with all of the same ramifications to them at that particular time, even though you, having been through it, know that basically this is something that they one day may never even remember, or somebody's name that they'll not even be able to recall 10 years from now. They don't see it that way right now, and it looms to them just as large as anything that you're battling with the same emotional upheaval in any area of your life. And you know how it is that you want to be supported and understood. You know how it is that you expect that companion of yours to love you and to try to provide the strength and the help that will help you make that kind of wise decision that will work for good as a result of the decision you make. That's our job at this very crucial time where our children are concerned. Now, with all of that said, I freely admit that when you talk about marriage, it is a very multifaceted kind of a subject, and that's why we're only going to focus right now on the idea of choosing a marriage companion for life. Now, did you hear what I said? I said for life. Marriage is not temporary. God did not design it as a trial. He did not design it as a temporary matter. He designed it for life. And yet, we live in a society that doesn't believe that. Did you see in the Dayton Daily News this week on Tuesday, October the 16th, about the big piece on Ann Landers? Now, I don't always agree with Ann Landers. I think some of the advice she gives is far out. I think sometimes she misses the whole consideration of what's being said. I sometimes don't think that she has the courage of any convictions, if she's got any convictions whatsoever. But I am willing to admit, by virtue of the vast number of years and the vast number of letters that she receives every year, that she is capable of giving to us some overview of American life. And as she talks about the 35 years that is evidently coming to a close this year in her work, one of the things that she did was to talk about the problems of our society today versus 35 years ago when she first started writing this column. And what she said in regard to the matter of the family was very interesting to me, and let me quote it to you. She says, "Well, for one thing, the problems I'm hearing about today are more disturbing. They reflect a serious deterioration of American family life." Now, I want you to understand something. This is not Bill Feist writing this. This is not a Church of Christ preacher writing this. This isn't any kind of preacher writing this, but it's going to sound that way. Marriage is no longer viewed as a lifelong commitment. Now, where do you think she got that idea? She got that by virtue of the millions of letters that she receives during the course of this 35 years and the changes that she's seeing in those letters about such. She doesn't seem to take any credit that her famous question is, "Would you be better off with this guy or without this guy? And if you decide you'd be better off without him, throw the bum out." And that really doesn't make a lot of sense from some standpoints of establishing some kind of solidity to the marriage-family relationship. She says 50% of all couples who marry today will end up divorced. The average American marriage lasts blank years. I'd like to see how many of us can fill in the blank. It's 7. And then she says that Americans have the highest divorce rate in the world. Hey, listen. You know, we all like to go around saying, "We're number one. We're number one." I'm going to tell you, if that statement is true, that's something we ought not to be very proud about being number one in. That's just all there is to it. Now, how true is that? Well, I decided this afternoon I'd just try it out. And so I came armed tonight. I just simply took the section out of the lifestyle section of today's paper where they put the marriages and the engagements in there, and I went through and marked them. And here's what I found. In the section where the marriages have already taken place, if you read through those, there are 6 of those young people that have gotten married who came from homes that have experienced divorce in them. Either one partner or, in some instances, both partners out of 14 that are reported here. Then out of the engagements, I found that there were 9 out of 20 that were exactly that same way, which works out by the time you get done to just about 50% when you take the fact that out of the sum total of this, there were 4 of them in which at least one of those such situations, the marriage ended honorably by virtue of death in 4 of them. And so when you get done, you've got about 50% just of those that somehow or another somebody either paid for or somebody got out here because they wanted it advertised that this is the way that it was. It is for this reason that we need to get out some information and especially continue to teach and to encourage our young people in regard to what the Bible teaches about marriage. And we need to try to continually keep before them as well as before ourselves in that marriage relationship 2 fundamental principles, and that is that marriage is real and marriage is for life. This is the way that God has intended it. Now, somebody says, "Well, now, before you get started, let me ask you, what makes you think you're an expert on this matter?" And I freely admit that insofar as being an expert by having some degree to back it up, I am not one. But from the standpoint of saying that I think I did a pretty good job 19 years ago, and that I could wish as good a selection for you as I made. After all, I not only was able to persuade her, I had the harder job of getting her to accept me in the whole task. That if we can do that, that indeed I think it gives us an opportunity to try to say some things from the Word of God that will help us. If you'll look back into the very beginning, here in Genesis chapter 2, when God institutes the marriage or the family relationship, you will notice that when he brings Eve unto the man, he says in verse 24, "Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh." I would suggest to you here in Genesis chapter 2 and in verse 24 that there are two key words that need to be recognized or seen. The very first one is that a person has got to be willing to leave. And that's exactly what God says. And I would suggest that there are a great number of problems that come in the marriage relationship if somebody is not willing to leave. Young person, if you're contemplating marriage, or when you do it, if you're not willing to leave mother and father, then you're not ready to get married. If that young person that you've selected, whether male or female, depending on who you are and where you are, be it understood, if they're not willing to leave, then you better hit the bricks. You better decide to look a little bit farther and find somebody else, or you better decide to wait a while, because if they're not willing to leave mother and father, then they've not met the first criteria that even God set down. This is an extremely difficult thing to do, and some find it absolutely impossible. In fact, the failure for some to leave mother and father has become the very basis in many instances for the problem of divorce in our society, and it often gets cited in these incompatibility kind of cases, or in regard to just simply the fact that this person is not going to stay with me. So in choosing a mate, you better make sure that you can choose somebody who's willing to leave mother and father for you. And I suggest, without trying to pick on anybody, that sometimes young ladies, I know there are exceptions, but generally young women have more difficulty with this, it seems like, than young men do. To those of us who are parents, I say this, and I probably preach harder to me about this matter than I would to anybody, and that is that we've got to let them leave when it's time to do that. Parents, it's hard to let them go. And the older I get, the older mine get, the more I recognize that. After all, whether you realize it or not, you're looking at a fellow that before his oldest kid went to kindergarten was up for a week ahead of time looking back at all of those pictures that we had taken through the years and could hardly stand the very idea of turning her loose out here in life and somebody else having some influence in that life. And it hadn't gotten much better in the years that have passed. I can understand the difficulty and the wisdom yet of what God has said in this matter. We've got to let them sooner or later try out their wings. We've got to let them go and cut the string. We can't hold on. And I would suggest something else to those of you who are looking at a companion. And that is, if the person you're looking at is somebody that you think is willing to leave, but their parents are not willing to let them go, then again, you probably have not met that first requirement, and you better continue to allow some more time, or else maybe you'd better look a little further. Along this same line, I've got something I want to say that some people don't agree with at all, but I feel like it needs to be said anyway. It's a very delicate kind of an area, and I approach it rather reluctantly. But nonetheless, I would always give this advice. In choosing your companion, you better take a good look at either your future mother-in-law or father-in-law. But I would suggest especially you better take a pretty good look at your future mother-in-law. And I'm not picking, now let me stop. I've got a good one, and I appreciate her very much. She never interfered, and she's never meddled. The only reason I say that is that generally the ladies form such protective attachments with their children that they struggle more with this leaving concept than do those who are the fathers or father-in-laws. Sometimes they tend to be so protective that they're unwilling to let those kids go when that's exactly what needs to be done. To you mothers or to some of us sympathetic fathers like I think I am, I would say this: when the time comes, that we've got to let them go. We can stand by, we can provide the assistance or the help they need, but we do not dare interfere or meddle into the affairs of that marriage. That's one of the words God says. But let me suggest that you see the second word that's there, and that's the word cleave. He says not only do they leave mother and father, but having done that, they're not out there just on their own. Now they cleave one unto another. It's interesting to me that in the Hebrew, this word cleave has a dual meaning. It's one of those words that when you look at it, you think, well, it can't be like this, but it is, because it can be used, considering its context, in ways that are just the opposite of one another. For example, it can mean to separate or to divide or to sever. And if you want to think about that, it's a crude illustration, I recognize, but think about a meat cleaver. And that's what it does. It separates or divides, and that's how it's used by somebody who's skilled in that kind of work. On the other hand, it is a word that can mean to cling to or adhere to or to be faithful to. That's just the opposite of that first idea. What you have to do is to look into the context and see which one of these two meanings is being used. Obviously, here it is describing the closeness in that marriage relationship of the man and the woman who have left mother and father, now adhering, being faithful to one another. They now cling to one another. They have formed a new family unit. And you know, the courts recognize this kind of an idea and have for a long time, haven't they? It is for this reason that a wife can't be forced to testify against her husband. Or what a man tells his wife is privileged information. It is protected by law. And that's the kind of idea that cleaving is all about. So what you've got to do is be sure that when you've selected somebody, you've selected somebody first who's willing to leave mother and father, and then, as God says, who is willing to cleave unto you, who's willing to be faithful to you like you are going to be to them. And you know what? Sometimes that doesn't happen. And it doesn't happen because in too many instances in our society today, people really do not see marriage as a lifelong commitment. Their idea is that it's as long as we both shall love. And so I'll cleave to you as long as I love you. But I'm going to tell you what. If I stop loving you and all of a sudden I decide maybe I love this person over here, or maybe there's somebody else I can love more than you, I'm going to cleave to them. That's not what that word's all about at all. And you need to understand and try to spend enough time in getting into the thinking of that person that you're contemplating as a future companion to see whether or not this is the idea that they have, that they're going to leave mother and father and that their intention is to cleave to you for life, because it's not working that way so often. Now, along this line, let me suggest that sometimes there is some very pertinent kind of information that is available that sometimes kind of helps a little bit. Some of it's a little bit humorous, but nonetheless, the points are those biblical points that we've been making that have been offered. For example, not very long ago, I saw a statement from a fellow who, in advising young people about trying to select a marriage companion, made the statement. He said, "Never choose a first mate who delights in taking the wind out of your sails." And I would suggest to you that's pretty good advice. In other words, don't choose a companion who delights in putting you down. If your dating relationship is basically one in which this person is constantly putting you down, or is constantly nagging, or constantly finding fault, or constantly picking, let me ask you, do you really want to spend your life for the rest of it with somebody who's going to continually, over and over, day after day, and you can't get away from it at all? Do that? Do you really think that sounds like an enjoyable kind of life? If this kind of person likes to hit you, as it were, when you're down, then you're headed for trouble. You see, the role of a marriage partner is to sustain or support the other one. It's not to tear them down. And so if these kind of things are happening, don't give me this idea that, yeah, we fuss and we fume and we fight a lot, but boy, it sure comes okay when we make up. I'll just tell you, that'll get old after a while. You need somebody who will sustain you, somebody who will support you, and that's the very idea of what God's saying in cleaving to one another. Another fellow, using a different kind of illustration, made it this way. He said, "Fellas, if you treat your wife like a thoroughbred, she won't turn into an old hag. If, on the other hand, you treat her like a plow horse and she does turn into an old nag, you've got nobody to blame but yourself." And I tell you what, that's about right. If we put that kind of a situation into the marriage, we're going to have problems that are going to arise out of it. And for men and women both, we better find out ahead of time if the person that we're with is going to be that kind of a person. If they're going to be somebody who delights in just putting you down or continually nagging about the situation. And if that's the case, then you better look a little further. You better try to change your evaluation and your likes and the things that appeal to you and go another direction. Now to the ladies, let me say this. You are aware, are you not, that the days of the beautiful damsel and the ugly frog and the kiss that turns that ugly frog into a handsome prince are over forever? When Grimm's fairy tale stopped being written, you understand that that ended, don't you? The quotation is a little old, but I still use it because I really like it. Marianne Wolfe, who was formerly with the Department of Labor a number of years ago, made this comment, and I think it's right on the beam. She said, "Prince Charming doesn't come anymore riding on a white horse. Rather, he comes riding a Honda and expecting help with the payments." And that's about the way it works anymore. It's nice to think that here's somebody who can live happily ever after. But it just generally doesn't work like that unless you put an awful lot of work into that. It's not going to work to where you're going to be set up out here in a beautiful castle and you're going to have servants waiting on you hand and foot, taking care of your every whim and your every need. It just doesn't work out that way. In fact, this really begins to point to one of the problems that exist in our society and just about every young couple and sometimes older couples are having to deal with. And that's the problem of, is my companion going to work outside the home or not? This is a real problem, and it really becomes more of a problem when children enter into the marriage relationship. It really becomes a rent in the fabric of our society today, and I admit that it is a complex kind of a problem, and it is one to which there is really no simple answer or solution. I wish there were, but there is not. I do know this, that marriage is a joint effort. It is a mutual relationship. And each partner has to carry their part of the load. I know this, that when we look at the load that we're carrying, we need to try to determine whether maybe that load is the result of an extravagant kind of a lifestyle. Young people, you need to understand something, and it's hard to understand this, I know. But you are not going to be able to start your married life where you walked out of your mother and dad's house at the same level. It just doesn't work. And so many times we expect we ought to be able to stay on that same level and go up from there. What so many times we do not know or we have forgotten very simply is this, that it took years of sacrifice, it took years of hard work, it took years of diligent, dedicated effort on the part of your mother and father to get to the position that they are right now. And you can't expect to start out with everything that they've got right there that you've become accustomed to while you dwelt in their home. For most of us, we have to step down before we're ever going to start stepping back up, and it's going to take a little time. And sometimes part of the difficulty that arises in this particular area has been because we've been unwilling to take that step down before we take the step up. And it has produced some of the very difficult problems that have come in some of the marriage relationships because of an extravagant kind of a lifestyle. Along this way, and I wish I'd have cut it out. I don't know what behooved me to let it get through my fingers. And I keep looking, thinking eventually it's so good I'll find it again. But I saw a cartoon back some time ago of a young man in the typical pose, down on one knee, asking for the love of his life's hand in marriage. And while he's there, the young lady's father is standing over here in the doorway, and as he asks for her hand in marriage, the father's response is this, "Which hand do you want? The hand that asks for money, or the hand that doesn't lift a finger to do anything around the house?" He wasn't a very good salesman, but he sure was honest. And I really wish I'd have kept that thing because I think it would come in very handy. You need to recognize that sometimes the world sees some of these problems that we've talked about. And a great deal of them really come back to this idea of what God has said in Genesis 2 about the marriage of leaving and cleaving. Now, in the few minutes that I've got left, let me suggest that I do want to talk about one of the evils that has invaded our society today. It is undermining the morals of our country and of many of our young people. It's becoming too much a commonplace practice among so many, and that is the problem of people just living together without the benefits of marriage. What these people want are the pleasures of the relationship, but they do not want the serious commitment that is associated with the relationship. They think they'll have less risk of being hurt by somehow or another not being in what they see as a legal, permanent relationship. And it doesn't work out that way at all. In fact, it is producing the problem in our society of a capacity being developed by us to where we are not able to live closely with one another because we do not have the commitment and the trust we ought to have. And rather than drawing us closer together, it is making us more suspicious all the time. And we look out in a very selfish way for our own interest rather than the interest of another. While doing some research for some of the things I wanted to say tonight, I came across a statement by Dr. Nancy Moore Clatworthy. She is a sociologist, and that ought to tell you about where she is on the spectrum of marriage. And this is a person who in the research was doing some research on this idea of living together. Here's what she says. When I began my research, the idea of living together before committing yourself to marriage made good sense to me. Now, somehow or another, for a sociologist, that statement didn't surprise me at all. However, she goes on and says, now, after scientifically analyzing hundreds of surveys filled out by couples who had lived together, I oppose living together in any form. Now that sounds like a gospel preacher, doesn't it? This was a very liberal sociologist who started out, and she didn't look at people like, she didn't ask me what I thought about it because I've not been in that relationship. She went to the kind of people who were involved in the relationship, and now she opposes it altogether. The truth is, the answers that she is making right now and the information she's giving out make very powerfully the point that God makes in the pages of Scripture. She says, and I quote, "Only a fully committed marriage relationship is really suited to working out to a best possible relationship," unquote. Finally, man, through some of his statistical studies, has come to the conclusion that God knew about from the very beginning because he was the creator. And he said it a long time ago, if we'd just be willing to accept it, believe it, and obey it. Along this line, I have a thing or two that I want to say to the young people especially that I hope that you'll remember and I hope that you'll heed it. I want to start by saying it like this. You know, every once in a while, there are some words that come into our vocabulary that are new words. Sometimes they are by virtue of tax purposes. Sometimes they are words that come by virtue of court decisions that have been rendered. I think the word that I've written up here on the board, alimony, is one of those words that all of us have known for years all about, isn't it? But do you know something? If you come along and take that word and do this to it, all of a sudden that word didn't exist when I was a kid. That word didn't exist until about a decade ago when all of a sudden it hit because they had to find a word for the situation, the television, media, and entertainment news shows, because a very famous TV star had been just living with a young lady and decided that he didn't want to do that anymore and was terminating the relationship that had existed for a number of years. And when he walked out or threw her out, she looked at the thing and said, "What? You've taken advantage of me. I deserve something for all those years I put in with you." And she filed suit, and now you hear all the time about palimony suits. You can't watch some of these entertainment tonight type shows of what's going on in Hollywood or with some of these rock stars without periodically hearing about somebody in that kind of a situation who have been just living together, and now somebody wants to walk away scot-free and somebody says, you can't do that. I helped you amass some of this stuff in those years I was with you. I am deserving of some of this. And all of a sudden, a new word was formed because of a lifestyle that is not approved of by God, and a number of legal headaches resulted from that. Now, I need not remind you, do I, that as Christians, the very idea of such an arrangement that produces that kind of a word is not only revolting, but it is likewise sinful. In Hebrews, the 13th chapter, and in the 4th verse, Paul says that marriage is honorable before all, and the bed undefiled, but whoremongers and adulterers God will judge. We could see the permanence and the intent of the purity of marriage in passages like Romans 7, verses 1 through 4. Or you can look back at what Jesus reiterated as he goes back to the very beginning in Genesis 2, there in Matthew chapter 9, verses 1 through 9, and again establishes that marriage is for life and it is for real. And you know, I know a lot of the arguments that have been presented to try to justify this living together arrangement. Inevitably, the first thing I hear is that, well, it's just kind of a common law marriage kind of a situation. And it's not that at all. In fact, generally, this idea of common law marriage has been frowned on by the court system, not only of our nation, but of just about every nation, because it's so difficult to try to do anything with it. And it generally is the result of what's going to happen when somebody walks out or when somebody dies in trying to settle the estate. And unless there is something that demonstrates that this was the intention of the couple, you have all kinds of headaches. Do you remember when Howard Hughes died a number of years ago? One of the first things that happened was what? Some enterprising woman came forward and said, we had a common law marriage. And the courts had to decide, was it or wasn't it? In fact, I think it was just this year that they finally settled the estate of Howard Hughes, if I remember. How do you determine? That's not the same thing. Or, marriage is just a piece of paper. It's just a scrap of paper. That's all marriage license is. I'm going to tell you something. That may be true, but it's a pretty important piece of paper. And you know it as well as I do. And I can illustrate it very simply. Can I see your driver's license, please? You know what that is? That's a piece of paper. But that's a pretty important piece of paper to most of us, isn't it? If you don't think that's a pretty important piece of paper, you ask a 15-year-old who'd give his eye teeth to get a hold of that, how important that is. And if you think it really doesn't matter because that's just a piece of paper, you go out there and let the policeman stop you for something, and the first thing he's going to do is ask you for this piece of paper, and you try that approach on him about that driver's license. Oh, I don't need one. It's just a scrap of paper. I know how to drive. And I'll tell you what. You'll be calling your mother or your dad from down at the city jail or the county jail or wherever saying, if you still own me as your kid, you better come down and get me out. Because they're going to be trouble. This idea that it's only a piece of paper, that may be, but it's a pretty important piece of paper. Young people, don't fall for that. Marriage is not a trial affair. It may be a trying affair, but it is not a trial affair. Weddings are as ancient as the hills, and somebody figured out a long time ago that there was something good about it. Don't cop out, and don't settle for something less than that. Well, that's all I've got time to say tonight. That's not all there is to say, and I want to say some more, so I'll just wait and say it a little later. When you think about the relationship that we've talked about tonight in marriage, it's something that needs to be constantly reiterated. The problems that we're seeing and the difficulties that are coming, even in the Church of the Lord, necessitate not only the fact that we're probably going to have to sadly do a little more teaching on the divorce and remarriage end of it, which means we've been defeated when we got to do that. We need to be doing more on this side of it. We need to be doing more work in the homes. young people need to be hearing from their mothers and fathers about the permanency of marriage. They need to be hearing about the qualities that God has established in marriage. And we need to not wait until they're ready to start looking for a companion, or they say that they've found somebody and all of a sudden we go through the ceiling because we think they've made an unwise choice. It better start early. When circumstances arise within your family or arise within the framework of your friends, where obviously somebody has disrespected the marriage laws of God, and you know your young people know that particular situation, don't be afraid to use it. Point out very pointedly and candidly that what's going on there is wrong and that it is just as sinful as it can be. If we don't get some of this help in the home, we can teach and we can preach until we're blue in the face, and it's not going to do a great deal of good because it's too little, too late. And so part of what I'm trying to do tonight is to give you some information and, if necessary, ammunition in an effort to try to teach and instruct in the family unit where we can work with our own young people along the way. They certainly need all of the help and all of the strength that they can. Because it seems that the world's not going to get to where it's going to be any easier to help them make the wise choices that have to be made. If you've made that wise choice, then allow that marriage to radiate. Allow it to be seen in its influential nature to where others can have you to point to and to show God's way does work. Because the world will say, no, it doesn't. Man was not meant to be monogamous. Yes, he was, because God said so, and he's the maker. When you think about this, we're talking about a relationship that is of God. When you think about the church of the Lord, you're talking about another relationship that is of God. And we must come to understand that there is some parallel between entering into the family of man and entering into the family of God. We enter into the family by virtue of the new birth. And I would suggest to you that as Jesus talked to Nicodemus in John 3, verses 3 through 5, he tried to get him to see that man must be born of water and the Spirit, that he might be able to enter the kingdom of heaven. The plea that we make with you tonight is that if you recognize that you're outside of a right relationship with God, the decision that you make about marriage or a marriage partner, whether you're going to choose to be married or whether you're going to choose to remain single all of your life, will not have any effect insofar as that is concerned with your eternal destiny. But the decision of what you're going to do with Jesus Christ will. Now, it can have an effect in the marriage relationship. It can if we choose somebody that we don't have a right to marry because they have no right before God. And that becomes a very serious matter that has to soberly and unemotionally be looked at. Part of the problems that we have when we talk about marriage comes from the fact that first we get the emotions involved and then we try to do our teaching or our studying or our thinking or our talking, and by then it's sometimes too late because we can't separate emotion from Scripture, and we have to. Sometimes the same problem happens when we try to recognize what God has said that we must do to enter the kingdom, that our emotions get in the way to the point that where we have our mind made up that this is the way that it has to be. And regardless of what God has said in how many passages, we refuse to yield to his will. If tonight you're here as one who recognizes that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and based upon that, what your determination and resolution is that you're going to repent of your sins and confess your faith in Christ and be baptized because Jesus requires that out of you. The only way to enter into Christ is to be baptized into him. Galatians 3 and verse 27. You can leave this place a child of God tonight. Whether you choose to get married or remain single is a decision that not necessarily will affect your eternal destiny. But what you'll do with Jesus certainly will. Why spurn him any longer? And the invitation that he makes that cost him the sacrifice of himself upon the cross. Aren't you willing to yield to his will, to his voice of authority tonight, and obey it? While we sing to encourage you, won't you come?